I thought it was loud enough anyway. But anyway, good evening. Welcome to tonight's candidate forum for the office of County Clerk Recorder. We'll begin the evening by sharing our gratitude. First of all, our deep appreciation goes to our candidates who are seeking to represent the people of San Luis Obispo County. It's become more and more of a challenge to take on such a responsibility, so we appreciate that you have stepped forward to serve your community. We next thank our sponsors for tonight's forum. Thank you to the American Association of University Women. The Five Cities chapter, Pismo Beach, has joined forces with the Atascadero chapter of the American Association of University Women to underwrite the costs of this event. Thank you for investing in democracy. We also acknowledge our volunteers of our county branch of the League of Women Voters. The League celebrated its 100th anniversary just a few years ago and considered the gold standard when it comes to nonpartisan stance concerning candidates. We have never endorsed, nor have we ever opposed a candidate in any election. But our most heartfelt gratitude goes to you, the members of our audience. The League of Women Voters puts emphasis on registering voters, but it puts a greater emphasis and value on educating voters and impressing upon them the need to do their homework when it comes to the candidates and the issues. You are meeting that obligation tonight. Again, we welcome, in alphabetical order, Elena Cano, Gaya Powell, and Vanessa Rosso. As a condition for qualifying for this forum this evening, the candidates were asked to join or to sign a memo of understanding, promising to not to display campaign attire and to encourage their supporters to refrain as well. The candidates have made their materials available outside this room. We are aware that we're pressed for time tonight. Therefore, we must be strict about the time limits on the candidates' responses. Helping us with this important task are volunteer timekeepers, Ann Quinn and Mary Matakovich. They will be seated so that the candidates may easily see them. They will raise their paddles to tell them when they have a minute left on their time, then 30 seconds, and then finally, when they must stop, their time will be expired. We will allow you to finish your sentences, but we'll stop you from beginning a new one. Now, we ask the audience to realize that any reaction, even positive, to a candidate's remarks may be disruptive and may distract them from using their time effectively. So please refrain from any interruption. And I was schooled a few years ago. I was taken back to the beatnik generation because I found that people in the audience were doing this. I hadn't seen this in a long time. Some people in the audience gave me the stink eye. I said, why? I mean, didn't say anything out loud, but why are you allowing them to do this? So that also, we will ask you to refrain from. In this vein, I also remind you to pull out your smartphones at this time and turn them off. Invariably, someone says to themselves, I have my notifications turned down. I'm not going to be the problem child. And they are. We'll be covering a number of topics tonight. Questions from the audience were submitted in writing. Question cards are still available from our League of Women Voter Greeter Runners, our volunteer runners, Straith Smith Sonartu, Gretchen Clark, Vita Miller, Edwina Cirelli, and Karen Coffey. We'll circulate amongst the audience to make available a list of topics and single cards that audience members can use to write their questions. Please, only one question per card. The questions will then go to our sorters, Joanne Schultz, Lauren Cook, and Nita Kenyon. They will choose the questions that best address the issues faced by the office without repetition and within the realm of the candidate's jurisdiction. The questions may not be aimed at only a single candidate. We will begin tonight's forum with opening statements of 2 minutes per candidate, speaking in order of the lots drawn previously this evening. We will rotate the order of questions to the candidates, and this ensures that each candidate has an opportunity to have the last word. There will only be time for a limited number of questions for each candidate. Audience members should be aware that not all questions can be asked in the limited time available, and we will end at 7 o'clock sharp. At the end of the questions, each candidate may have a closing statement of 2 minutes. Closing statements will be in the reverse order of the opening statements. So, speaking of opening statements, Ms. Gaya Powell.
Good evening. Thank you so much for coming, and for all those sponsors, thank you so much for making this happen. My name is Gaya Powell, and I'm a business consultant with over 30 years of experience strengthening organizational systems, improving operational performance, and restoring accountability in complex institutions. I have partnered with public and private sector organizations to implement transparent procedures, robust internal controls, and disciplined management practices that drive efficiency, reduce risk, and build high-performance teams. I'm a constitutional candidate dedicated to administrating the elections in full compliance with California law while fearlessly advocating for reforms that strengthen election integrity and legitimacy, public trust, and civic responsibility, including voter identification, proof of citizenship, clean voter rolls, and transparent processes. I believe public officials must uphold the constitutional rule of law and protect the informed participation of every citizen. As clerk recorder, I will prioritize institutional accountability, procedural clarity, reliable public record stewardship, and uncompromising election integrity. My leadership philosophy is rooted in constitutional governance, measured performance, and principled public service. Thank you.
Ms. Cano.
Thank you. Is this on? Thank you. Thank you also to the League and to the AAUW for the volunteers that are helping us out, and of course for all of you that have taken time in your day to be here with us tonight, and of course those that are watching us online. It's very ironic for me to be here tonight because 32 years ago, in 1994, I started my public service career right here in this room when I was the director of the Little Rutgers Preschool. So it's kind of fun to come full circle and be here with you this evening. It is an honor to serve as your county clerk recorder. I am looking forward to continuing my efforts here. The County Clerk Recorder's office and my job specifically is built on public trust and transparency, accuracy, and of course, most importantly, is experience. As the one that has been doing the job for the last 4.5 years, but then having decades before me to prepare me to continue this effort, I am just so honored and so grateful to continue to serve and be a part of this community at such a higher level. So I thank you all for your trust in me over the last 4.5 years, and I look forward to continuing to serve.
Ms. Russell.
Good evening, my friends, and I'm such privileged to be here tonight before you to answer your questions and to give you my insight as to why I would be the best candidate for the County Clerk Recorder for 2026. My husband and I are small business owners, and we have lived in the Central Coast for 35 years, and we raised our children here in the Central Coast. And I am also a paralegal, so I also represent the law in the Central Coast, and I represent people who are in the transitional time of life, running estate sales and also doing wills and trusts to help people. And the biggest thing that the word comes out is the word trust, because indeed this is the biggest part of the establishment of the County Clerk Recorder's office, is to establish trust. Bring the trust back to the Central Coast in the election process is what I am going to definitely bring to this San Luis Obispo County citizens. Over the past 6 months, I've been out listening to the community, because one of the things that I do is I talk story with people. I am willing to hear your story and how this office affects you or has impacted you, or what you learn and what changes can be done. And that is what I've been doing for the past 6 months, is listening to our community. And I look forward to sharing that information with you tonight on how I can build a better San Luis Obispo County with the election process as well as our vital records. I thank you for your time, and I look forward to the conversation we're gonna have tonight.
The first question of the evening goes to Ms. Cano. Do you know or believe that the results of the 2020 presidential election were valid? Please explain your answer.
Do I know if the results of the 2020 election were valid? Yes, they are valid. I'm assuming I'm gonna talk on my experience. I wasn't here in 2020. I was with Santa Barbara County at that point. But of course, working very closely with San Luis Obispo County, and knowing that I represent the elections division with the rest of the 57 other registrar voters in this state, I know for 100% sure that our results from that 2020 election are definitely accurate. We have extensive laws that we have to abide by. We have extreme guidance with the Secretary of State's office, with our local county councils, and we rely heavily on one another. And there are so many checks and balances, chain of custodies, the training that our staff goes into. So yes, I 100% agree that that the 2020 elections were definitely accurate and fair and honest.
Ms. Rosso?
Thank you. Can you please repeat the question so I can verify it?
Certainly. Do you know or believe that the results of the 2020 presidential election were valid? Please explain your answer.
I believe that the 2026 election,
2020 election.
Thank you. The 2020 election offered a lot to be, thought about, because obviously a lot of people have different opinions and mixed opinions on this. But what I base my information on is purely facts. Because the fact is, everybody can have a conspiracy theory. Everybody can have their opinion on what could have or couldn't have happened. So what I base it on is the facts. Now, indeed, I did not do research on this campaign of this election. I'm sorry, I did not do research on this election. So it would just be my opinion. And based on opinion, we know that we are held to a higher standard by the Secretary of State when it comes to the election process. So indeed, we are held to the law. And so if the law shows that we are rightfully counting the ballots and everything is legitimately offered under security when they go in to count the ballots, I believe all things are proven through that type of integrity. I'm not sure of everybody's election results and how they played out. There has been a lot of conspiracy. That is not something I have followed, and nor is it something that I am passionate about following conspiracy. I base everything on facts. Thank you.
Ms. Powell.
So I also try to base everything I do on facts, and I don't have the actual facts to prove if they were legitimate or not. I think the real question is, why does the public have so much question about the legitimacy of our elections? I can speak from personal experience. When I went to the county clerk counter in October of 2024, I was filming a woman who had gotten two ballots, one for Arroyo Grande that had been forwarded to her office, absentee ballot, obviously, and another one that was sent to her office that was for Grover Beach. So she was not living in either of those cities. And then she also got a postcard that let her know that if she didn't confirm the address that the ballots were going to, that they would automatically register her. So another problem with this story is, and this is on Rumble, anyone can look it up and watch it themselves, she was never registered to vote. She was in escrow, she was between properties, she had specifically asked the post office, you know, when they ask you if you want to register again, and she said no, because she did not have a home. And the county clerk's office told her she could use that ballot from her office, or she could use an address that she was staying at a hotel that evening, or she could even use an address for a empty lot that possibly she owned and she was going to build a house on. So I think there's just a lot of question. Thank you.
This next question is for you, Ms. Rosso, to answer first. What experience would you bring to this job that is directly applicable to the work you would be doing on day one? Please be specific.
The experience that I bring to this job, to this level, it is a level that we have to rise up to, and this level is organization. I work under a very highly organized job structure. I do international and national disaster relief for FEMA and Samaritan's Purse. This demands a very high level of, number one, disaster relief. And we have to learn how to work in very, very intense situations. The county clerk recorder's office absolutely needs to be highly organized, accurate, integrity, and efficiency. This is what I bring to this office. Day one, I would like to jump on board with the team, because this is going to be a team effort. Everyone that is in that office is a part of a team, and the team needs to unify under leadership. And when we direct ourselves together to work together as a team, we can bring this to high level of organization and bring back the integrity as well as the accountability and the transparency of this office.
Ms. Powell?
So this is the type of work that I've done my whole entire life. So I'm a business consultant, and what happens is, like, if it's Universal Studios with hundreds and hundreds of employees, Yahoo, or two smaller businesses I've worked with, real estate brokers to Pathways to Health, medical space, I'm hired to go in and assess the situation and re-engineer, and then implement new systems. And I'm highly successful at that, and I'm very efficient at that. And so that's exactly what I would do with the county clerk's office, is I would go in and assess the situation. I'm sure most of the processes, you know, that are regarding land management, record keeping, et cetera, have been well established for probably decades and improved over the years, as they should be. But we'll see. And then I also meet with the team and really get to know them and make sure that the right staff and talent is in the right position so that they can thrive and be able to grow and feel confident. I'm an excellent leader, and I just give very specific instruction. I have standard operating procedures that I put in place. And my team has always been able to come to me, and anyone that's ever worked with me I would be confident in knowing that they knew that I was always looking out for them and I had their back. So I'm ready for this job first day because I've been doing it for decades.
Ms. Cano.
So on day one, I would continue to do what I've been doing for the last 4.5 years. And that is to bring forward the level of leadership that is required to lead my team. The team that I have right now is exceptional, but they don't, they need my leadership in order to continue to steer the ship forward. Expecting anything else of them would not be fair enough to them. My role as their leader, as knowing what needs to be done in compliance with these laws, the expectation of our voters and our community members, there is absolutely no room for error. There is no learning on the job. There is no manual that you get when you come into this office. You have to be ready to uphold the law. You have to be ready to serve the public at the highest level of accountability on day one, right before 8 o'clock comes. Thank you.
Ms. Powell, you lead off on this question. This job has many important aspects. Which aspect gives you the most concern?
The most concern is our election legitimacy. I think even with my own experience in filing papers for running for office, when I went to the county clerk recorder's office, it took about 4 people at coming and going to try to help me figure out how to navigate the forms, even though I had filled out most of them. And so I agree with Ms. Cano that these people are lovely, they are well-intended, they are very smart, but I really felt like they didn't have the answers that they should have had and the training that they should have had. So I think that, you know, with my, obviously, my business history and being able to go in and make sure that people know exactly what they're doing, just like my other experience when some of the clerks were telling people they could vote with different ballots that they shouldn't be using, that's very concerning. And so I want to make sure that my highest priority is that we're following the Constitution and the constitutional laws. Of course, I will obey state laws, but I'll be an advocate for reform so that we go to back to common sense and make sure that the state isn't overreaching onto our rights to be able to hold the type of elections that we would like to, because the Constitution provides those safeguards to make sure that the state does not dictate to us. And I would definitely educate the public on how they can get involved to change leadership if they're concerned about that. So that would be a very high priority for me. Thank you.
Ms. Cano, please.
I don't know if there's actually a one component that is of concern within either the county clerk's side of the office, the county recorder, or elections. Each of them is equally as important to make sure that what we do is in accordance with the law. And so I know that the focus is always on elections and election integrity, and we do take that normally as our top priority, which is why you see so much communication being pushed out and education from my office to dispel all that misinformation that's going on out there. But at the same time, on the county clerk and the county recorder side of things, it is still important for people to know that their deeds and their recorded documents are being kept safe and that they are being protected and that voters' information is still being held confidential. And that on the county, you know, we treat everybody with fairness and the same. It doesn't matter who you are. We treat you with fairness and respect, and we are absolutely non-political. There's no judgment in our office, and I think that we spread that across the three distinct divisions in the office.
Ms. Russo.
The question one more time, please.
This job has many important aspects. Which aspect gives you the most concern?
I believe there's several levels of concern that I have heard over the time that I've been talking to the community that have come to my attention, and I've done my research to find the facts. One of the biggest concerns people have is about the election process itself. There has been some people who have been disenfranchised by the voter, by the county register's office, because of the fact that they were not able to come in and serve as a poll worker. I was actually signed up to be a poll worker, and then I got a letter a couple weeks later saying that, no, you cannot be a poll worker because you're a candidate. That is not true. And then it was stated that it was the law. No, that is not the law, just to be insightful. So I was also listening to the disenfranchisement of precincts being shut down because there wasn't enough staff, and that concerned me. There is also the fact that when I went out to watch the election process out, because I wasn't able to be a poll worker, I stood as a poll observer. So the fact is, as I was observing, I noticed there's a lot of mismanagement at the precinct level, and it concerned me gravely. One other thing I'd like to implement is giving anybody who has a transfer of title of their property to be notified, and that will be something I will bring when I come into the county recorder's office. Thank you.
Ms. Cano, you're the first person to answer this question. How would you respond to the request for voter rolls or ballots from outside groups?
Great question. Just came across my desk. So how do I respond? So the moment that our ballots are sealed, they will not leave my possession without a court order and an official warrant. And when that has to happen, typically it's going to be the district attorney's office that is going to file an investigation with us. There has to be complete and clear evidence of something going wrong. You can't just ask for it and then get it. So if something came across my desk and requesting to look at our ballots, the answer is no. I am protecting the vote of the people, and I will continue to do so. As far as voter rolls, your voter information is confidential. There are certain criteria that under certain categories can you request voter data. For example, being a candidate, I can request voter rolls. And with that, I would be able to see confidential voter information. But just because somebody is curious about what the voter status is with a certain person or community or party, you don't necessarily, you're not privy to that information. And we take that very seriously in our office, and we protect that as well. Just as well as our ballots, they're not going anywhere. Nobody's going to get their hands on any of your voted ballots.
Thank you. Ms. Rosso.
Question again, please.
Certainly. How would you respond to the request for voter rolls or ballots from outside groups?
Again, this is highly confidential, the voter. And so I definitely agree that this is something that is not given over to anyone without the law involved. So basically, to support the district attorney's office and the noticing of the current people who are trying to bring under investigation some things that have been in question. So the fact is, no votes shall ever be turned over without proper authority, proper authorization that come from the law.
Thank you. Ms. Powell?
And please repeat that one more time.
Certainly. How would you respond to the request for voter rolls or ballots from outside groups?
I would definitely make sure that there is a court order, and I would assume they've actually reported it to the sheriff or the state before even coming to me. And if anyone actually came to me with that request, that's exactly what I would ask them to do, is go ahead and contact the state. When Ms. Kano was on the radio with Mr. Dow, she made it very clear that they collaborate with each other. And she had mentioned there was an 800 number that people can call if there's any concern about voter integrity, et cetera. And I know that's not exactly the ballots, but anything to do with, there is no hotline, by the way. And then when the investigation started with me, the DA's office, actually the complaint for Michelle Morrow came from Elena Kano after she certified her that she was authorized to run. And then Elena Kano also forwarded the complaint about my residency with from Tom Folks, who's the head of the Democratic Party, to the DA's office. And the DA's office got my voter records without a court order. Elena Kano's just handed them over. The city of Arroyo Grande, though, when they were requested with the same information about my voter information, they insisted on a court order. So I would make sure that it goes through the proper channels. I would start with the sheriff and definitely the state and the FPPC.
Ms. Rosso, your first to answer this question. What do you see as your role as potential county clerk to ensure our elections are fair, accurate, and free of intimidation or on election day?
One of the big things that needs to be done with the county clerk recorder's office and the election process here in San Luis Obispo County, we need to update our process. Too many hands touch the ballot. I'm very concerned about that. I have seen mismanagement from the very short time that I was able to watch the election process in this past election, which was a special election, which I wasn't even on the ballot, but I really wanted to just see the clarity of what actually happens when your vote is being out of your hands into something else, somebody else's hands. It concerned me. So the fact is, what we need to do is, first of all, we need to stop with the election process the way it's being handled. I would like to go to vote centers where you can actually vote your ballot at any super precinct. So it doesn't matter if you live in Grover Beach, Paso Robles, and you work in Paso Robles, you can actually vote up in Paso Robles your ballot. This is called a vote center. We're one of the only counties who doesn't even implement this. I'd also like to bring in electronic poll books. This is going to be done with a geographical information system that's going to connect the security of the poll book to the county clerk recorder's office. And this will enable you to vote in person, and they'll instantly mark off your ballot that you have voted. It will not record what you voted for. It will simply just record that you voted. Your, again, paper ballot will be printed. Thank you.
Ms. Powell.
I think we're an incredibly welcoming community. I do not believe that anybody feels like they're intimidated when they vote, when they go to vote. And if, again, anyone does feel that they are intimidated or anyone is infringing on their constitutional rights, that they would contact the sheriff immediately. And they are the law enforcement agency that have that jurisdiction. I believe that feeling that you're very informed on how to vote. I think a lot of people aren't really intimidated to go to the polls, but they're just not really sure how they should vote. Like we've been told, you know, don't use the absentee ballot, surrender it and get a provisional ballot. So that can get confusing, absolutely. And I do disagree with Ms. Russo. I don't believe that we need more electronics and more things that can possibly be hacked, go wrong. I think we should actually get closer as a community and go back to the way it was when we're connected. We know who lives in our community. When I first voted, it was, you know, in a garage. you know, and not that we need to go back to garages, but I think we need to go back to common sense and getting connected and being so, and stop being so disconnected. We're all Americans. So again, if anyone sees anyone that feels like they're intimidated, I'd hope that, and I know that our community would make them feel welcome. Thank you.
Ms. Cano.
Mr. Cabrera, can you repeat that again? I feel like we're all over
Absolutely.
The place right now.
What do you see as your role as potential county clerk to ensure our elections are fair, accurate, and free of intimidation or election on election day?
So I have the biggest role in the entire county as the chief elections official. My job is to make sure that our poll workers are adequately trained, that my staff is adequately trained, and our voters are informed on the various ways that they can cast their ballot. You receive your ballot 29 days ahead of time. There's multiple drop boxes that you can drop them off at. There are polling places that you could go wherever you would like in the county to cast that ballot, and you can come visit us in our office. We would love to see you there as well. So the role of the chief elections official is huge. You count on us. You count on the operations and the safety and security of your vote. I want to highly disagree with the fact that there are too many hands touching your ballots. That is called chain of custody. That is called looking at it and making sure that your ballot is going to be counted and processed accurately. I would also like to highly encourage all of you to go to our website, because the information that you've heard tonight in regards to the e-poll books that will be implemented in June is completely false and inaccurate. So please, we have an FAQ on our website on exactly what e-poll books are going to, their functionality at our polling places, and it's nothing that you just heard. Thank you.
Ms. Powell, you lead off again. As a Cal Poly student, I have received several mail-in ballots from previous tenants. What will you do to ensure that ballots are delivered to the right person and that the vote is verified and secure?
Wow, well, that's a big question. That's the problem with our whole nation. And even Jimmy Carter warned absentee ballots would lead to corruption. So I think the only way to eliminate that problem, which is very common, as I mentioned before, I was at the counter with somebody who got too many ballots. And then there was other people coming up saying, hey, we haven't lived in L.A. for 3 years, and now we got our ballot from L.A. So I think we get rid of absentee ballots. That's the only way to do it. We go back to paper ballots, and again, we reconnect as a community. And when the state dictates how we do our elections, like Shasta, where they sue them, which goes against the constitutional safeguards, that we're not in control of our own elections and what processes that we would like to do. So again, I will abide by state law, as I will be very vocal in advocating for reform that makes sense to make sure that the election integrity and legitimacy is secure. Like I said, the more hands, the machines that can be hacked. I mean, I'm not saying that they are hacked, but they can be. Anything with a software can be hacked. I mean, I think anybody at this point in 2026 realizes that. So voter ID, proof of citizenship, you know, it's unbelievable to me that it's even gotten this bad. Thank you.
Ms. Cano.
So to answer your question about the Cal Poly student who has received multiple ballots, I believe was the question.
Yes.
Cal Poly students. It is voters' responsibility to make sure that they update their own voter registration when they either move or when they change their name. We don't know. We are not, our eyes are not all on our voters every single time a voter decides to move. So when a student registers at a dorm, I can guarantee you the student before them that lived in that dorm did not change their registration. We don't know that. They could be still there for all we know. Why wouldn't we send that person a ballot? So we send out residency cards prior to the elections to confirm who is living there. If we get that back, then we know to update that voter's registration. If we don't get it back, how do we know? We have 182,000 registered voters here. I don't know. Our office does not know every time somebody moves, either down the street, out of county, in the county. It's voters' responsibility. If you move, if you change your name, take responsibility and update your voter registration.
Ms. Rosso.
I hope my voice isn't too loud. Sorry, I have a strong voice. My fact is, what I'd like to implement, again, is the super voting, the super precinct. And this would possibly eliminate the mail-in ballot. I would like to go back to absentee ballots, where you request your ballot to be sent to you. And then if you wish to vote in person, you simply come in to any of the vote centers and you could be able to cast your ballot in any of the precincts that are up and down the Central Coast. I think it will efficiently clean up our voter roll. I believe what Mrs. Cano said, that, you know, the electronic poll book, I'm really grateful, is going to be implemented. It's been used up and down or across the United States for several years. And I'm glad that we're moving towards that. I hope that will help to clean up the voter roll in some way. But it also is to say, I think it's the most effective way because our communities have grown exponentially. So we can't go back to the walk in and say, hi, that's my neighbor. I barely know any of my neighbors anymore because our community has changed so much. But what I'd like to say is, wouldn't you be more excited about going to vote if you didn't have to go back to Grover Beach, if you live there and you can go up into North County because you work there and it's more efficient, or plan it in your day that you can vote at any vote center? I think it would be very efficient for our community. Thank you.
Ms. Cano? No, we answered that question. Did we? Well, back to Ms. Powell again. What steps will you take to safeguard that SLO County resident deeds are not compromised?
That the deeds are not compromised. I would, day one, as I start to assess, you know, how the processes go at the county clerk recorder's office, I would start to understand those processes and see if they are efficient. I don't know why there would be any question on that. And there's a lot of, you know, obviously, again, there's a lot of trust issues with the government overreach on landowners' rights. So I think it's really important that I get in there and learn about what the processes are to make sure that the landowners' rights are being protected and that their deeds aren't being stolen from them out, you know, out from under them due to fraud and whatnot. But to actually answer that question, I'd have to see what the systems are in place and see what needs to be corrected to ensure that all of the records, I mean, it's the custodian of records. Probably the county clerk recorder's office is probably the most important role in our county. So obviously just making sure that all the systems for everything. And obviously, to me, because I am a constitutional candidate, the having education for the public to make sure they understand the importance of keeping their property rights, and that we don't, you know, have them chipped away with all the new taxes, like this new $6,000 tax that they're putting on property owners. So, thank you for your time. Okay. I could say more,
Ms. Cano.
So currently we, real estate fraud, to keep your deeds safe and secure and safe from being compromised. For those of you who don't know, we have a district attorney investigator who is the best in the country right here in San Luis Obispo County, who we work with if not daily, at least weekly. He is in high demand to go to across the country and work with other counties to be able to provide the support that he does for us to ensure that real estate fraud does not come to one of us. And so what we do now, there is a new law that has been implemented that we will that we are currently working with our assessor's office on, and that is to be able to do a notification. So anytime there is any type of document or movement within your deed or your land records, that you will be notified. Now, that's going to get annoying to you if you are the one that's doing it, because we're going to say, are you sure you're the one that's doing it? And you're going to say, yes, I was just at your office. But it's just a safeguard that we will keep in place to make sure that you are notified if ever there is any fraudulent activity that's happening. It is alive and well in this county. The people are trying, but with our partnership with the DA's office, luckily nobody here has been a victim.
Ms. Rosso.
Thank you. I agree with Elena. This is a very important situation. I met with Kevin Irott, the First American Title company, and we discussed in length about the title protection of your home. And I did early research, early before they brought this to law, that they need to notify the property owner of the transfer of their information and their title. So I did some research and found Placer County does have this, where they are notifying the individual if your title does change, if your property title does change. And so they will notify you, like Elena said, just repeatedly to make sure that indeed this is you who is transferring the title. And again, Dan Dow has done an amazing job setting up a forum where we could go in and participate and learn about the fraud that has been or potentially can be here in the Central Coast. He's a very good resource for knowing about what fraud protects the citizens of San Luis Obispo County. So indeed, the notification system is now implemented, which is straight across the board, which is amazing, because that is something that, again, early research. There was a gentleman up in North County who did bring this to my attention, one of the first guys I talked to connect him with the answer, because he was genuinely concerned. He has large pieces of property, large land. And I said, well, let me find the answer for you. Because if you have a question, I'm going to find the answer for you. I'm going to listen to your story, and I'm going to find out the truth and face the facts and find the facts for you. That's what I set out to do, and that's my promise to you as the citizens of San Luis Obispo County.
Ms. Cano, you lead off with this round. What is the biggest barrier to voter registration in San Luis Obispo County, and how would this be addressed?
The biggest barrier to voter registration, I guess it would be on different levels. We work really hard to go out to all the various communities and educate them on the importance of being a registered voter. For example, in 2024, we worked very closely with a Latino outreach group, and we went out to those communities to educate them on the importance of registering to vote. As a matter of fact, tomorrow we get to go to the Prado Day Center and speak to those that utilize their resources and educate them on the importance of their voice and the importance of being a registered voter. So I think the barriers come down to people not knowing all the steps that are involved in registering to vote, if they can vote, what does it mean to vote? And I think the barrier would just be for them the unknowing, and it's important for us to make sure that we are communicating that and doing our outreach and our education despite what community you belong to.
Ms. Rosso.
I agree with Elena, because the fact is we have to educate the people who really truly want to vote. I would like to spend, I've been spending time on the Cal Poly campus getting students registered and letting them know that they can vote while they live here in San Luis Obispo County during their time. And then once they leave, they need to re-register where they transition to. The other place I'm going to be spending time is in the senior centers, because I know a lot of seniors would love to vote, but maybe they don't have that opportunity. So I'd like to give them that opportunity as well. But it's all about the education of voting. And I think a lot of people just feel so, number one, the political climate is a bit noisy, if you agree with me, I'm sure. We need to tone that down. But obviously, it's also the fact that many people don't trust the system anymore. They feel it's broken. And I would like to bring back the integrity, transparency, accuracy, efficiency in the voting process to allow people to see a smooth, quiet transition. And I'd also like to bring back the fact that we don't know our people in our community, and we like to get the word out to our community. And I think Elena's office has done a remarkable job by using their public informational officer to get the word out and involve the community in this. I think it's very important to use social media to build the recognition of the importance of the vote. Thank you.
Ms. Powell.
Sadly, I think that because of the way that our school system has devolved over the decades, that civics classes are just gone. So I think it's very important to have the county clerk recorder try to set up civics education and coordinate with the schools to make sure we get our civics education back in our schools. Because when you start to teach the children the importance of their incredible right to vote, and it's their, in my view, their moral obligation to vote. That's how we keep our constitutional republic safe, so that we actually can support a democratic system. So I think it starts with the schools, and it's great to go to the colleges, but obviously, but we also need to start educating the youth. And then when you educate the youth and they get excited about things, they go home and talk about it to their parents. And then their parents will start to realize how incredibly important it is to get out and vote and engage, and that they're they have to set an example for their children. I mean, that's why, in my opinion, our state has turned into, but sadly, people literally call it Communist California. I was in Vegas and someone said that to me. I was devastated as a Californian. And so, you know, just really getting back to, you know, having the children understand that we do not live in a democracy. We live in a constitutional republic that utilizes a democratic system. Think about the flag.
Ms. Rosso, this is your question. Leadership has many styles and types. What is your leadership style? And where did you learn your style?
Well, I think everyone can say that everybody always thinks, oh, you think outside the box. Well, the truth is, to me, there is no box. I'm a very unique person. This is my personality. From the very beginning, I realized that I stand out from my early years all the way into my adult years. I'm a very strong thinker and organized, highly organized person. This is the immediate thing I do when I walk into any situation, is how can I handle this and organize this situation? My mind instantly goes into that mode. As a leader, high organization brings structure. It brings trust. It brings the ability to provide unity. And I think that's very important when we realize that we need the leadership of a team that can come together under one element. The fact is, when I work with people, I work with them. I don't work in government. I work alongside government. When I do national and international disaster relief, I'm the team leader, but I work with government to do the efficiency of the mitigating of the disaster. And that's what I've learned to do over these years, is work alongside government to bring them the ability to structure the mitigation of the disaster. Thank you.
Ms. Powell.
Would you please repeat the question?
Certainly. Leadership has many styles and types. What is your leadership style? Where did you learn your style?
I learned my leadership style in 25 years in the entertainment industry, from starting in the production world, making my way all the way up to the high-level corporate world. And so I was very privileged to get to know and witness and observe excellent leaders. And an excellent leader, which I have now proven through my own successes and the fact that people continually hire me to come in and assess their staff and their operations to make it run more efficiently, I empower my team. I know what their strengths and weaknesses are. I don't set them up for failure, and I make sure that everyone feels like like I said earlier, that I have their back. So my leadership style is just that. They know that they can count on me. They know that they will be trained well, so they're confident, and that they will, if there's any question that they do not know the answer to, like what I witnessed at the county clerk's recorder was very concerning to me, they know to just come get me or let that person know, you know what, I don't know the answer to that, so I will have Ms. Powell, you know, reach out to you. I was told that Ms. Kano, when I did have that experience, was going to reach out to me. They told me that she would, and she didn't. I even put in a public records request, and it was 8 months later, and then I had to go to a supervisor's meeting and complain about it, and then she finally responded. So I think that leadership is when you know that your team... Oh, that's it for me.
Thank you, Ms. Kano, your leadership style.
I would think that my leadership style is very open, very honest. I'm incredibly accessible and approachable, not just to my team, but the responsibility that I have for all of you. There's 24 hours in a day. I don't work 8 hours a day. I work 7 days a week. And that is because I know how important it is to have access to me. And I welcome that. I take the time out of my day in order to be able to do that. I learned that. Where did I learn how to be a leader? And I would guess that I learned that through the women in my family, my aunt, my grandmother. They always taught me to treat others with the same amount of respect as I would want. And that's how... that's how I treat everybody. I don't ever put off what I can do today as far as my communication and my community. And most importantly, you know, just making sure that everybody in our office and all of you have the answers that you're seeking. And of course, it's always going to be fact-based.
Ms. Powell, you lead off this round. What are your thoughts on requiring ID to vote? If the SAVE Act is passed in Congress, would you comply? Why or why not?
I absolutely would comply. It's common sense, and they've done many polls that show that not just California, but the rest of the nation, no matter what party you're with, agree that somebody needing to show ID to prove who they are is essential to making sure our elections are legitimate. And the only reason California leadership would not want to have you show your ID is if they would like to delegitimize the election. What other reason would it be? I did witness at the clerk counter that day where people were coming up with their absentee ballots and trying to show their ID, and they were literally like, no, we don't need that. That is unbelievable to me. That is outrageous. So absolutely, and I will, as much as I can, lean on any federal laws that make sense, that are constitutional, and I'll stand up against any federal laws, and there's plenty of them that are not constitutional. Again, our Constitution protects us by providing safeguards, and we need to demand from our government that those safeguards are honored. that's the only way to keep our constitutional republic. And if we lose our constitutional republic in this great experiment that is America, we lose everything. And I think we've really come close to it. It's just become a circus.
Ms. Cano.
So anytime there's a law that is being enacted, yes, of course, I'm going to abide by that law. However, because this role is non-political, that means that I will not advocate for any side, whether I personally agree with it or not, because I am here to be impartial. And for some folks, having voter ID is a great tool. For others, they see it as a disenfranchisement. So for me to be impartial and non-political, I will stand my ground on that. And if the law says that I have to do that, I will most definitely do that. You as registered voters already provide us with your ID. We have your social security number or your driver's license number. You sign under penalty of perjury. If you break the law, that is on you. It is not up to me to make a determination to whether or not you must show a form of identification or not. Again, if the law says that I have to, I will impose and I will act on the law. But to be able to sit here and be impartial and non-political, I won't take a stance on that.
Ms. Russell.
Thank you. I have one little comment to say. I will not be available 7 days a week. I'm sorry, because I think I put God first, family second, my career third. I will be here to represent you in a highly efficient, organized way to where none of my staff will ever have to work more than the required 40 hours a week if that's what their job entails. Because I believe that there needs to be structure. Based on the structure, it's all constitutional law. We are governed by constitutional law. We are not governed by policy. We have to follow the law. If the law is put voter ID, we will put voter ID. If it says no, the answer is no. Black and white, plain and simple. If you would like my opinion, I don't know my neighbors anymore. I barely know my community that's out at large. I would like to know people who are leaving and coming and going from my community. It's very interesting to see how this has become such a debatable concern. But in my opinion, I believe that we should, if the real Bob Smith could please stand up. Well, let's see what we can ask them. First of all, we can get their birth date, and they already provided their social security number. If they are required to provide the ID, I think that would be a very good opportunity to show that we can identify the person. It's an opinion only because I have my constitutional right to vote as well. Thank you.
Ms. Cano, this is your question. How do you ensure the privacy of the voter and voter information?
Well, there are laws that govern the privacy of your voter information, which, of course, we, again, it's all law-driven. Our office is not about policy. We don't make policy. We uphold the law. Despite how we might think it might be better, that isn't up to us. The law requires certain standards. If you look at our California Elections Code, it is probably this size, about this thick, and it's in about an 8-point font. We are required to know that. And in those sections of the code also has the requirements to keep your voter information confidential. Our processes are completely transparent. From 29 days before the election, when we start processing vote-by-mail ballots, come on in and take a look. Be a part of the process and observe. All the way through in our audits before and before the election, during logic and accuracy, and during the canvas with the 1% manual tally, be a part of the process. If you're questioning your security and the confidentiality of your ballots, please come into our office. We love to have you and just be a part of it so you yourselves can make that determination.
Ms. Russo.
Excuse me, please repeat the question.
How do you ensure the privacy of the voter and voter information?
I think right now we're in a very difficult time of understanding what privacy really is. When you walk into the precinct, you're submitting a envelope with your name on it. When that name separates from your ballot, that's when your ballot becomes private. Because anybody who takes that envelope, any mail person that sees that envelope, anybody who sees that name, that's your ballot and that envelope. I'm just asking, at what point does your vote become private? So my thinking is, if we eliminated the envelope and you walked into a super center, a super vote center, and you gave them your name, they're going to print you a ballot. That ballot will not have any signature on it, any name. It will not connect you. And then you go and you put your ballot into the box once you voted in your little booth that's private. You put your ballot back into the box, boom, it's over. No connection to you, no connection to your signature, just you walking in. That's how I see it.
Ms. Powell.
I'm sorry, but that question is interesting. Can you just please read it one more time? Sorry about that.
No problem. How do you ensure the privacy of the voter and voter information?
I don't even know how that could be a question. I would think that the county clerk recorder's office would be incredibly diligent about keeping everybody's information private. I would assume that for decades that there's systems that are in place to make sure that that happens. And if for any reason during the voting process that people's IDs are, you know, being somehow learned or discovered, I don't even know how that could happen. So I think that's an interesting question, but it's just, it would be common sense and obvious that I would assume that I would go in and assess the situation, but I'm pretty confident that they keep most of the voter IDs and information private. And again, probably need a court order to get anybody's private information, I hope. Thank you.
Ms. Russell. This person wants to know what your experience is in volunteering as a poll worker or other election worker roles, and how has this experience informed your understanding of the election process?
Thank you. Before actually I applied to be a poll worker, I had 5 deaths in my family. I actually was supposed to go out and be a poll worker, but I could not, because within 6 months, 5 of my family members passed away. So it kind of took a little bit of a wind out of my sail for a while. Once I regained my ability to kind of focus back on what my civic duty wanted to be, I signed in to be a poll worker. And I was denied because they said I was a campaign candidate, which indeed is not a law. I could have served because my name was not on the ballot. The fact is when you study the election process, the election process is governed by law. So more than likely, by the time I receive the invitation to become county clerk recorder, the law will probably change. So the fact is when you step into this role, it will be an evolving process. So what I'm wanting to do at this point is just say, the voting process will be, sorry, I just got a little bit of a remembrance of serving in the poll. When I watched the election process, basically what I saw was very discerning. Watching people like eat Cheetos while they're counting your ballots, that bothered me. Watching a lady drop when they were counting the ballots at the precinct and they noticed that a ballot slipped onto the floor underneath their feet and they didn't see it, and I was watching and observing at the poll, I had to bring to their attention after 20 minutes of trying to find out where these missing ballots were. I said, there's a ballot underneath your feet. And so she used her foot to scoot the ballot towards her to pick it up. Bothered me. I saw people in the polls who were giving false information and misinformation to the people who were coming in to vote as well. You can see my website. Thank you.
Ms. Powell, your experience.
My experience personally is I have never been a poll observer, a watcher, but I do know people who have, and I know people who have actually filed affidavits complaining about their concerns or voicing their concerns about the efficiency and the operations, as Ms. Rizzo was just talking about. There, one in particular, I won't name him, but he actually went through a class you have to take to be an observer when you're at the headquarters, and then he would go to the different locations. And he said you couldn't, like, prove that anything nefarious was happening. It's just every place he went was doing it differently. And he did not feel confident in the way that the ballots are being put in almost, well, they're like a canvassy type of box with a little suitcase lock on it. Again, if we could just get back to, you know, how it's common sense to go in and vote, show your ID, paper ballots day of, and get the results done as soon as possible. The other concern that I have, again, is the collaboration with the DA's office that Elena Cano has. When these citizens came forward, and there was like 200 affidavits, they had gone to the sheriff, and then the sheriff had gone to the district attorney's office, and the district attorney's office questioned them, and then apparently, from what I was told, questioned Ms. Cano, and then that was that. So there, it never went further than that, not to the state or maybe the proper authority or jurisdiction. Thank you.
Am I free to go?
Yes, Ms. Cano.
Volunteering as a poll worker, no, I've not volunteered to be a poll worker, but I write the manual for the poll worker training, and I conduct several hours of poll worker training. So, and I'm incredibly familiar with that process, in addition to all of the regulations that has to be put forward to these poll workers. Now, I don't know how many of you out there are actual poll workers, but it's a strenuous job that you get 3 hours of training. We've worked for months on this election, and we turn it over to you on election day and say, you've been trained for 3 days, good luck to you. And you know what? We have not had any issues. I stand by our poll workers. I am so grateful for them. They put in their time in order to serve our voters, to make sure that your ballots are kept secure from the polling place to my office in Central Count. So the amount of regulations that we have to cover during that poll worker training is intense. We are doing additional outreach with our poll worker training in hopes to be able to get more of those videos online so that they don't just have that 3 hours to sit there and be so tired of listening to us talk, but now they'll have the ability to go online and watch the videos.
Ms. Powell, how do you feel about the widespread public perception that the present administration is making efforts to disenfranchise voters in the coming 2026 elections?
Now, I'm assuming you mean the state administration that has made it, has...
It is the presidential administration, okay. The federal administration.
I was kidding. But I do not believe that anyone is being disenfranchised. And I, as a female, or just as a human being, it is so insulting to Americans who have IDs when there is a certain propagandized spin that it's going to disenfranchise people if they have to show identification. That is absolutely absurd. No matter, I mean, you have to show ID to get alcohol, to go to the DMV, do anything. So it's like it's ridiculous to make people think that we're so stupid that we don't know how to get an ID, or if we're divorced that we don't know how to go in and file the new information, you know, to have it on record. I don't think that anyone feels disenfranchised because we're not that stupid. And if it's regarding the propagandized, if you know, a lot of people think that like the ICE agents are going to scare people off. Well, if you're a citizen, why would you be scared off? That's absolutely absurd. Again, can we go back to some common sense? That would be awesome.
Ms. Cano.
Thank you. Can you repeat that question?
Certainly. How do you feel about the widespread public perception that the present administration is making efforts to disenfranchise voters in the coming 2026 elections?
Interesting question there. Well, I think first and foremost, our job is to worry about and to take care of our voters here in our own county. I think that the trust, I think that we hear a lot in the media, in the news, across the country, but I think for our voters in our county here, the trust is there, and that is proven by our turnout. We have, out of 58 counties, we are always at the top five or six out of 58 counties, and the counties that are above us have less than 10,000 voters. That is something to be proud of. So yes, we hear so much that is going on in the news, how everybody thinks that they feel, but here in San Luis Obispo County, I think that the trust is there. I don't feel that I've never had a phone call where anybody has ever said that they have felt disenfranchised. You get your ballots, everybody gets their ballot 29 days ahead of time. And so disenfranchisement, if I can remind you, means that we are restricting your right to vote. You can't do that when you've been mailed a ballot to your home. So everybody has that opportunity to vote. And I think here in San Luis Obispo County, I don't think that there is any evidence of anybody feeling disenfranchised. And if they do, by all means, give me a call.
Ms. Rosso.
Well said, Elena, because I felt the same. That's a very interesting question. I've kept my face quiet because the fact is this is a very noisy political arena out in the big world. I don't know how better to say it. It's very daunting to hear all the political rhetoric. I've never heard this in my whole life. I'm a very quiet person. I live in a very small town, and to hear all the political climate in the streets, it's very disheartening, because I would like to go back to where we were at peace with one another. Just common sense, constitutional law, get out and vote. It's your very privilege. It is your right. And the fact is, I don't listen to the political climate. I don't tune in to TV. I do not watch the news. I do not listen to the opinion of the political parties. I only listen to facts. If you have facts, bring them to me. If you have political rhetoric, go talk to somebody else, because I really don't want to hear it. I don't mind listening if you are involved in something that brings injustice or disenfranchisement to you and your family. Please let me know, and I will show you the proper path to get that resolved and make sure that I represent you so that you feel, as a citizen, you are represented with your vote.
Thank you. We have come to the closing arguments, and as promised,
Were we arguing? Oh, okay.
Freudian slip. And you are given 2 minutes each, and as promised, we're going to do it in reverse order. Ms. Powell was the first to give her introductory statement, and Ms. Rosso was the last. So we'll flip it around. Ms. Rosso, you will give your closing statement. So much law and order.
Thank you, my friends. I really just want to say I am so grateful to have this opportunity to come before you to get to know me. Because to truly understand who I am, you need to get to know me. Because the fact is, you can't judge me by what you see on social media, by what you hear in the media, by what you see on TV, by others' opinions. Please get to know me before you make your decision. Because really, all of us up here are wanting to represent you, the community. And I just feel like it's our time to step up and serve. It's my time to step up and serve and do my civic duty. My family came over 10 years after the Pilgrims. 10 years. We've been here. I'm also Indian. I'm Osage Indian. My family, the Rancho Dalton Azusa, the city of Azusa, that's my family. I'm California through and through. I want to step up and serve my civic duty in a nonpartisan way. Because as Billy Graham says, I'm not for the left wing or the right wing. I represent the whole bird. That's truly who I am. I want to represent you and your family and your community to bring back the integrity, the transparency, and the efficiency of this office. I believe Ms. Cano is doing an amazing job, but we need to do better. Our community was the last to have their votes counted. There has been some mishandling in this office that has been bringing public to the concerns that has cost our taxpayers a lot of money. We need to stop this. We need to stop the lawsuits. We need to stop the rhetoric. We need to stop the noise. If you challenge me on this, I'd like to show you the evidence. Please visit my website or take my personal phone number, 805-709-0624, and I'm not available 24/7 because I love my husband. And I love my family, and I respect privacy in that way. Thank you for your time.
Ms. Cano.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much again to the League, to the AAUW, and to all of you, again, for letting me serve, for trusting in my ability to protect you at all lengths. But in one statement that Ms. Rosa just said is don't judge me by my social media and my outreach. I'm going to say the complete opposite. Please take a look at our social media as the county clerk recorder and everything that's on our website, and then that's exactly who you will get to know. We do things top notch in our county, and I couldn't be more proud, not just of the service that I do, but the service of my team and the evidence through you guys of coming forward and asking these critical questions, putting me in the hot seat all the time and knowing that I won't back down from that. I just appreciate this time. I look forward to continuing to serve you for the next 4 years under this leadership and guidance and trust and honesty and, of course, at the top level of abidance by the law. Thank you all for being here tonight.
Ms. Powell, you get the last word.
Thank you all for coming, and thank you for our hosts for inviting me. I greatly appreciate it. Many citizens underestimate the profound constitutional significance of the clerk recorder's role. This office administers elections that determine who represents us, safeguards official public records that affect property rights, legal transactions, and supports systems essential to lawful governance and economic stability. Because every citizen deserves elections they can trust and have confidence that every vote is verified as legitimate. As San Luis Obispo County Clerk Recorder, I will restore confidence in the constitutional administration of elections and the institutional reliability of this critical office. Elections and public records are the foundational and lawful government and the protection of individual rights. This role demands discipline, management, clear procedures, and unwavering adherence to legal and constitutional standards. Citizens must trust that elections are administered impartially and that public records are maintained with absolute integrity. I will honor my oath to the U.S. Constitution as well as the California constitutions and ensure that the office operates with professionalism, accountability, and full transparency. Strong, independent leadership is essential to rebuilding public trust and reinforcing the legitimacy of our electoral system. San Luis Obispo County deserves a county clerk recorder who puts the people and election integrity first. Though I always will honor my oath to the Constitutional Republic above all, which actually helps represent the people and protect them, and I don't get swayed by the popular opinion. Thank you.
For those of you who would like to review the candidates' responses, I remind you that the League of Women Voters YouTube channel will make this available to the citizens of the county. Thanks to the volunteers tonight from the League of Women Voters. Could not be done without you. Many, many hours of organization. Thank you. And is it not refreshing to have candidates that respect each other in their comments and also respect their audience? The League of Women Voters has a committee dedicated to civil discourse, bringing it back to our school boards, our cities, our county officials. And I must tell you that I might suggest to the chairs who are in the audience today is that you might want to use this recording of tonight's event as a prime example that the citizens of San Luis Obispo County can still come together and listen to their candidates and, above all, be respectful of each other. Let's end it with that note. Have a good evening.